broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen. Mark Kohler is on assignment today. He is traveling. You know, he's actually shooting at MSNBC Studios today for a segment with MSNBC. You'll see more of that through the newsletter. But don't worry, my friends. I am still with a CPA today. We have Rick Taylor, who is filling in for Mark as the resident CPA expert on the show today. Rick, thank you so much for not making me play CPA today.
Hey, no problem, Matt. It's great to be here today.
Yeah. I know Ben Affleck pulled it off in The Accountant. An average movie, but really the only one, I think, about an accountant. But
We don't get much glory.
No, it's just not an exciting field. You know, there's plenty of lawyer movies, plenty of lawyer TV shows. I mean, even if I wasn't a lawyer, I'd still try to pretend and be one. But
sure.
Accountants, I mean, you know, it's just one. You got your one movie. Just hold to that. Just hold on to that.
Hold strong to it.
Yeah, it's something. Well, thanks everyone for being with us today. If you're new to the show, the Refresher Wealth Show is all about helping you better live the American dream, save on taxes, protect your wealth, learn how to grow or start your business. And today's topic, we're going to be talking, this is a really good topic for today. One, we have a lot of clients who are actually in the trenches on, and we have two great guests we're going to bring on today. So we're going to be talking about starting and succeeding with an internet-based business. You know, whether you've got, you're selling, I don't care, the smallest product online, or whether you're Amazon, we're going to be talking about starting and succeeding with an internet-based business. We'll have two guests come on today. I'll announce them later as we bring them on in the show. But they've got a wealth of experience in this field, authors, and both have also started numerous million-dollar internet-based businesses. So you'll be in good hands for today. I want to give a little plug today for those. If you could give us some five-star reviews, we always are asking for those. If you can get over to iTunes, those of you who are finding us now on Stitcher, we're on Stitcher. We're on like numerous podcast resources through Google Play as well. So go find us if you haven't on those channels and give us a five-star review as we're trying to build up some listenership there. Of course, we know most of you are listening to us through iTunes and through the podcast app through iTunes. So also, please give us a five-star review there. Now, the offer still stands. Mark and I are still giving a free book. You can get a free copy of my book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook, or Mark's latest book, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. If you give us a five-star review, just send us an email. That's to Matt, M-A-T, or Mark, M-A-R-K. We're both at kkoslawyers.com, kkoslawyers.com, and we will send you a free copy of either one of the books. You pick. There's no shipping and handling nonsense. You know, we just ship it out to you for free. And for Mark and I, that's a lot because we're two cheap dudes, and giving away free books is, you know, it's really a genuine way for us to say thank you for helping us with this show and helping others find it. All right. Now, Rick is, as many of you know, we like to give a tax and legal tip before we delve into the show today. And I mean, the very most important thing I needed Rick for, he's going to help throughout the show today. But I just did not want to give a tax tip and a legal tip today. So I'm gonna pass the baton over to Rick today for a tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Yeah. The tax tip for this week. So So for those of you that may not know, Mark does a lot of little 3-minute YouTube clips. And his latest one, I wanted to talk about and just highlight a few things. So what he talked about is for airline miles, you know, redeeming your points and getting your airline miles. Just wanted to go through a few things with that on whether or not it's taxable. So if you redeem those miles, is that a taxable event? Do you have to claim that as income on your tax return? And that sort of thing. So if you're an individual that's doing it, the treatment is going to be a little bit different than if you're a business that's doing it. As an individual, if you redeem your miles, you're cool. No taxable event. You're not going to get a 1099. You know, you're not going to have some surprise thing in the mail saying, hey, you have to pay taxes on this. It's good. You're good to go.
So you mean individual, like that was just my personal credit card I use and I've accumulated those points or miles and I redeem those for some personal reason.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So yeah. Right. So that's what I mean by individual.
Okay, gotcha.
But if you're a business and you're using you're swiping your credit card for and collecting points as the business,
yeah.
Then the treatment there can be a little bit different. Because the IRS, they look at these points as a discount, basically. So that's why as an individual, you don't have to pay it. But as a business, what you're going to do is you're going to swipe that card and the points are building up in the background, but you're going to take the deduction on right. your business tax return for it. So if you're
damn
getting
right
the deduction,
that's right.
So on the business level, if you're getting a deduction for it, you're going to have to claim it as income. But there is a strategy there. So if you travel for both personally and for business, when you're redeeming those points, redeem them on your personal trips. That way you're taking the deduction, and then if you're using those points for a personal trip, you're not going to have to pick it up as income. So that's a pretty neat little strategy that you can use for redeeming those points.
All right. So you lost me at the end there. So it's not income to me if I redeem the points for travel. Is it something specific to travel, or what if I?
Yeah. So if you're traveling personally,
okay.
So you swipe your card for on a business trip. You're swiping your card,
yeah.
But if you redeem those points for a personal trip, that's where the strategy comes in, where you don't have to pick that up as income, those
okay.
points. So if you use the points on a business trip. Then mm-hmm. yeah, you're gonna have to include that in income because you took a deduction for the mm-hmm. for the travel to accrue those points.
Okay. All right. Well, that doesn't make any sense why the IRS would allow that, but I'm glad they do.
That's Mark's strategy right there.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in the tax code that doesn't make much logical sense, but that's cool. That's good to know. I mean, that's something that's been around for a while. I know that Mark's talked about in particular and some others. So, all right. Well, thanks for that tax tip, Rick. That's, I think, you know, as you're out there as a business owner and you start incurring a lot of expenses and you're paying for a lot of stuff with a credit card, that's one of those areas where points can be used. And if you're good about your credit and not overextending yourself, that, you know, this is what way these points can really pay off, and in a tax favorable way too, where you don't have to claim it
right.
as income and get the perks back out of it. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's the best kind of perks for sure, the tax-free ones. All right, well, now it is my pleasure to follow that great tax tip up with a hopefully adequate legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, the legal tip I want to give for today is how to handle disputes. I had a client recently who received, and I've had a couple of these actually over the last month or so, received some notices from other lawyers. And these are business owners who have a business, provides goods or services. There's some disgruntled customer. They go hire a lawyer, and the lawyer fires off a letter. And, you know, I'm always amazed by the plaintiff's lawyers out there and what they seem to throw out as demands. One of these demands, you know, this is a consumer issue of maybe a couple hundred dollars. at issue, and it was really a billing dispute, more or less, of signed up for contract for services. The customer was mad about something or the services, or didn't think they were represented properly, so they tried to cancel. They weren't able to. They go to collections. You know, this is not a novel or unique story. This happens quite a bit. And the business owner was like, well, there was no dispute. They just weren't happy, and they wanted to get out of it, and they couldn't. So they, you know, make up some excuse of you misrepresented something. And that was essentially the business owner's position. But what came from the plaintiff's lawyer is this person gets fired up enough. They go hire a lawyer. Lawyer sends off a demand letter, demands that the contract be canceled for services, essentially, and that the person, that their client be paid $100,000. I don't know why they didn't just say $1 million. I mean, just throw another zero in there. Why not? I mean, 100,000, I guess that seems like a reasonable number, because this billing dispute caused them much worry, heartache, and concern. And damages of $100,000 are necessary. Now, this is my summary of a dispute here, and I don't have all the facts, but this is my first glance at it. And the first thing that comes to mind for me is I'm a little annoyed, frankly, that a lawyer would demand that. That's not really reasonable, and for a couple $100 contract issue, really. And there's a contracted issue that's going to outline how damages can be collected anyways, and you want to make sure you have a strong contract that protects you and limits what damages can be and how you're going to resolve disputes, and they have this, so they're going to have some good channels to actually resolve this properly. But one mistake I've seen a lot of people make is they get that kind of BS letter, whether it's from a customer or a customer's lawyer or some other party that you may be doing business with. And let's face it, if you deal with 100 customers out there, you might have one that's going to be unreasonable and never be happy, or maybe one in 1,000. I don't know, but you're going to cross them. Okay. Those people exist in the world. Even if you have this greatest heart and you always take care of the customer, you put them first, you're going to run into these. Okay. Just think of the best company you know and how they treat their customers. Go on Google. They're going to have negative reviews from some crazy people, okay? So how do we deal with these people? Now, the first reaction I think a lot of people make is, well, I'm just going to stick my head in the sand and I'm not going to do anything. Or they get so fired up by that letter, they make an irrational response. And I think the one thing that's really important with these crazy claims or disputes that you receive is we tend to respond to them in extremes. Either we do absolutely nothing because they're so ridiculous they don't even warrant a response, or we go totally overboard because they're so ridiculous that I'm going to be so ridiculous in reply. Don't do either, okay? Don't treat ridiculousness with ridiculousness. What you need to do is treat that complaint the same you would any other complaint, all right? Run it through a standard procedure. Gather your facts and information. Figure out what happened. Try to make them happy. Try to resolve the dispute. Explain your point of view and what happened. Review your contract and how are you going to resolve this dispute. And make sure you're corresponding in writing on these types of things. It's always nice to have a paper trail of what's happening. Don't admit to anything if you didn't do anything wrong, but try and gather some factual information first. Then make a plan of attack on how you want to resolve it. Now, you may not offer them the $100,000. You're not going to do that to settle it, obviously, for a couple $100 contract claim. But you want to try and understand what happened. See if they have some validity to what they did. Did you make a mistake? If you did, see what you can do to try and respond to it. Now, this doesn't seem like the most groundbreaking legal tip, but you'd be surprised at how many clients will come through that will take an extreme response to a customer dispute like this by either not doing anything at all or by going way overboard in their response. And both of those two things seem to foster more that person to get more annoyed and more annoyed and more annoyed. So just try to be measured. Try to sit back, take a neutral perspective, look at this from, like, you're not the business owner, it's not your business, and then try to respond in hand with how you would any other reasonable complaint you may have received. And I think if you do that, you're going to have much greater success in resolving this, because on the other end of that is a person, you know, and they want to feel validated in their complaint. They want to know that you heard them. So a lot of times they don't understand your perspective. You may presume they do, but they don't. And so you may try and, you know, let them know your perspective on how it happened to try and set the record straight, so to speak, if you did entirely nothing wrong. So, well, that's the legal tip for today. I hope you find that useful in resolving disputes. I'm sorry that lawyers do exist and send off those ridiculous letters like that, but you know, I guess they keep all the other lawyers who are the good lawyers in business. So I should not be complaining. All right. Well, Rick, I think I'm going to intro this topic today, and let's get just some initial thoughts on starting succeeding with an internet-based business. The one thing I just want to say as we start this topic, there is this image floating through social media recently of Jeff Bezos, the founder and CEO of Amazon, sitting in what looked like a 8x8 office, maybe 10x10 office, at a desk with a sign that he could have made himself with a marker, or maybe he got it at Kinko's for $10, that said Amazon on the side of it, hanging on the wall. And that was the founding of Amazon. That is how Amazon started, obviously the number one internet-based business, and possibly, I think, maybe it's top five largest businesses in the world, but certainly the one known for running the internet, and one that many of our clients have their own Amazon shops and have, or they have some other business that they also sell product through Amazon. So there's a lot of internet businesses within Amazon itself, but I thought that was a very interesting image to see of how the largest business we know about started as a small business. And whether you're looking today to be the next Amazon, you know, in your internet business, or you're looking to just have your small piece of a certain market for a certain product or a certain good or service, or whatever it may be that you're trying to do in an internet-based business, we're going to try and get you some tips and strategies to find success. And we're going to be bringing on some guests here in a moment. But Rick, I don't know, you know, as I'm thinking about a lot of our clients that have internet-based businesses, I think a lot of them, there's different categories, I would say. There's some that are kind of swinging for the fences that want to be the next Amazon in 20 years. I think there's some that are comfortable with what they are, or, you know, they're trying to be very niche, I would say. But I don't know if you have any initial thoughts on starting or succeeding with an internet-based business. Anything you want to bring out before I welcome our guests onto the show?
Yeah, sure. These internet-based businesses, we're seeing more and more of them. And I think one of the advantages of them is I think the barriers to entry, I think it's pretty easy, you know, to put something up there and try to sell it. So I mean, we've got a lot of clients that like you say are just in this like kind of the startup mode, and they're getting going. Mm-hmm. And then we see clients that have been doing it for a few years and are doing really well. And so they've kind of figured out the how to do it well. So yeah, it's really an exciting area of business right now. So yeah, I'm excited for this to hear what these guests have to say and go forward with it.
Yeah, so this is not a get rich, you know, quick scheme here. We're gonna dispel that, and so don't think that's, as you know.
Well, no,
that's not our style, as everyone knows, but we will bring these guests on here in just a second. So let me get over to our guests here. All right, well, it's my pleasure in welcoming our special guest for today. This is Scott Fox. He is the founder of the popular lifestyle entrepreneur coaching community, clickmillionaires.com, author also of the same book, Click Millionaires, Work Less, Live More with an Internet Lifestyle Business You Love. Sounds good to me. Work less, live more. That's a good motto to live by, Scott. So thanks for being with us today. So tell us about, you know, why you wanted to write a book, Click Millionaires. I mean, maybe tell us, get an give us an insight into your background. I know you've had some, you know, your own experience in internet-based businesses, and how you kind of got into writing a book about it.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Matt. Well, I've been an internet entrepreneur for 20 plus years. I was there early on at Stanford when Yahoo was back a student project on the campus servers, that sort of thing. So yeah. I've been doing this for a long time. I raised my first round of venture capital for a .com back during the first boom, and gradually figured out that I'd rather work for myself than work for venture capitalists and a board. And that's what I've been doing for a long time now. So my books are an effort really to help other people figure this riddle out. The media tends to present technology entrepreneurship as two things. One, that you need to know a lot of technology, and the other is that you need a lot of money. And neither of those is necessarily true anymore. A lot of things are less technical than they used to be, and you can easily hire people inexpensively if you don't get the tech side. And then the money side, same answer. You really don't need millions of dollars in venture capital to scale up, because there are so many services online that are actually competing to try to help entrepreneurs get their businesses up and succeed. So my books are an effort to sort of democratize the successes that I've had personally and also seen in Silicon Valley, and share that with sort of the regular folks who are outside that bubble in the Bay Area, who are interested in living life a little better on their own terms.
Yeah, I think, you know, as people look at internet-based business, I think there's some, I don't know, I want to say pie in the sky, but I think a lot of people, and I was saying this earlier in the show, is a lot of people think, well, I'll be the next Amazon, you know. And or we see clients. I mean, I had this one client I remember 10 years ago whose sole business was fishing tips. Okay, he had a website, and it was fishing reports at certain lakes or streams, rivers, you know, and where fish were biting, what, you know, bait to be using and all this. And he made pretty good money. I mean, he got ad traffic. This was this is back when that was basically the model back then was, you know, have a site that people went to and basically get good ad traffic. And that's what he did. He had a lot of, you know, outfitters that would sell, you know, stuff to people who like to fish, essentially. And it was kind of this cool business that we saw this client do. Even this hunting and fishing, we had another client that would do similar things with just like hunting licenses and signing people up to basically go hunt into certain hunts. And this is something I thought, well, this is just not big on the internet, but they had these really small niches. What do you tell people though when they're thinking? I think some people may be listening, thinking, "Well, I've thought about doing something online." How do people know if they have a good business that would work online? I mean, is there a way for them to think through their business idea or what product or service they're trying to sell and think, "Is this going to work online?"
Yeah, it's a great question, and your examples are inspiring too. I coach a lot of people. I run a forum called the Masterminds Forum online that I've run since 2009. So I've been helping people all over the world for a long time. And I've seen lots of those situations exactly like you're talking about. And I think mm-hmm. the key is the riches are in the niches. And the reason I say that is the math that we were all taught about business, it's kind of wrong when you look at the internet, because business was traditionally based geographically or limited by the size of your ad budget. You could only find people in a local area or that you could afford to reach. But the internet changes all that. It removes geography from the equation. So your example with fishing tips, well, yeah, there might only be, I don't know, you know, 50 or 500 guys who are as into fishing as you are in your town.
Yeah.
But if you go out on the internet, there's millions, right?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, you could have a business like that, and it's wow, you know? So when you remove geography from the equation, it changes the math entirely. So that's what I think gets people excited. So how do you quantify that? How do you know what to do? Well, that is hard. You know, the best way, of course, to try, but people are scared to waste their money and even their time. So there's a lot of testing you can do these days. It's really inexpensive to put up a website these days, even if you're non-technical. But even easier is quick advertising campaigns, like, for example, on Facebook. If you're, just continue your example, fishing tips, there's lots of people into fishing on Facebook. And for $50, you could go on Facebook and put up an ad that says something about fishing tips and just kind of see if anybody clicks, right?
Yeah.
Now, fishing tips, you've already validated that one for everybody, but people that are listening might have some other niche idea that they're thinking about. And seriously, you could do this in less than an hour, and you don't have to be technical. Believe me, Facebook's happy to take your money. They make it as easy as possible. And, you know, it's a bunch of point and click, and you can start to validate and at least see if you know, honestly, does anybody give a damn? And that's the real question that nags every entrepreneur. You know, you got to have faith, but how much faith?
Right. Yeah.
You know, you can test through things like that.
I like that. I mean, I think give it a good trial run, you know, test your concept out, maybe get a basic page and some basic info out, see if you get traction. I think you have you have to find some model of getting people to your site. If it's going to be a site or wherever your shop's going to be, I mean, you've got to have some marketing that's going to get people to go there, right? So whether
exactly.
I mean, the internet's huge.
That's exactly right.
Just because I put up, you know, xyzshop.com doesn't, I mean, no one's going to type that or go there unless they find me some way. So,
right. That's when I talk, that's a good point. If I can, let me elaborate on that. That's the other thing where the math is different. And you grow up thinking like, if I've got the best, you know, my grandma's secret cherry pie recipe, you think it's all about the cherry pie recipe and you've got the best cherry pie, you know, in Texas. Okay, great. But how are you going to get it out there, right? And that's the key. The problem these days is not supply, it's demand. Like, how do you find the demand? And if you have the demand, it's really about distribution. So if you can get it on the internet, like getting it on Amazon, that then suddenly you've got at least the possibility of reaching everybody really quickly. And even then there's competition, of course, to differentiate yourself. It's a long equation and road, but you're right. It's different than it used to be. You don't start with the product. At least I don't. The coaching that I do with folks in the Masterminds forum, it's more about, okay, you've got an idea. Now, who cares? And how many of them are there? And how can you prove how much they're going to pay for that? That kind of equation. And that's kind of what you were saying. So I wanted to agree with you.
Hey, Scott, what do you tell people who have this idea, but they just feel so overwhelmed that they don't even know where to start?
Right. Hi, Rick. It's a phrase my dad taught me, and this might make you laugh. It's that old joke, how do you eat an elephant?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Right.
So yes, absolutely. Overwhelm is the lifeblood of an entrepreneur. I literally have pages and pages of to-do lists, even though, I'm already successful, but there's always more you want to do when you're an entrepreneur. That's just kind of the way you're wired.
Right.
So you just got to break. You got to break it down, and honestly, yeah, exactly. And you got to break it down into the small steps. And here's the motto that I work by, and that I recommend to folks that I work with: what can I do that has the least work that will offer the most return for the least cost in the shortest amount of time? Sort of a razor to slice through it all, right? Because it's easy to spend a whole afternoon fiddling around on Facebook and call that research, right?
Yeah.
Or to tweet your logo 17 times. Yeah, right. So what can I do will have the most impact with the least work? And if you can look at your to-do list every day, that means some stuff will get pushed down to number 10 or 15 or 30 and never get done. Well, maybe that's okay because you did the first four things. And it's a discipline thing. It is. There's no easy answer, but that's the best one I've come up with.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
that was a great tip. All right. Well, what I had this question about Amazon because I get this sometimes. I've had some clients ask me, and I see all these ads. You know, it's like, you know, go to the Holiday Inn, you know, in your town next weekend and learn how to start your Amazon based business. What do people need to know about selling on Amazon? Whether you're an existing business that wants to sell product on Amazon or you're starting out new, like what is involved in selling product on Amazon?
Well, first of all, be really careful about going to seminars and hotel ballrooms. That's what I'd start with. You can save yourself $500 right there.
Yeah.
More seriously, the Amazon phenomenon is incredible. I mean, their stock just keeps going up, and the distribution opportunities it offers individual entrepreneurs are incredible. And yes, a lot of people are making money, but honestly, right now, this feels a little bit to me like the cryptocurrency craze. Everybody thinks Amazon's where they want to be, right? And last week, everybody wanted to be in Bitcoin. This week, maybe not so much. But so I guess I would start with be careful. And the other big piece is people, you want to test, right? And if you're doing what they call Amazon FBA, which is fulfillment by Amazon, you need to put all your stuff in their warehouses, in which case you need a large shipment of things. And I've seen a bunch of people get caught up in those hotel ballroom seminars, and then they go and order from China like 10,000 units of whatever widget they came up with, and you know what, they get stuck with 9,990 of them because their 10 friends all bought one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so I'm very in favor of it, but honestly, I'm a little bit suspicious that that train's kind of left the station for the individual entrepreneur.
Really? So what if you have your own product? You know, you're a business, you have a product you sell anyways. Should you go put it on Amazon? I mean, let's say you
would. This is the same question I get a lot from people who are, they make videos or they have content, and they said, well, should I put it on YouTube? I'm like, yeah. It's not about exclusivity anymore. It's about distribution. In a world with when we were younger, it was like, oh, there's 100 channels. Wow. Now there's a billion channels, right? So how are you going to get out there? Well, whatever it takes. So maybe you don't put the full thing on YouTube, you know, your whole 2-hour masterpiece movie. But if you're not there, people aren't going to see even the trailer, right? So you got to get it out there. And I would say the same thing with your products. You put something on Amazon, get people's attention. Maybe there's a cheaper version, or you can upsell them to a bundle or a larger package on your own website, that kind of thing. I really honestly see Amazon, as I do YouTube, it's a marketing channel for you as much as it is an actual sales channel. And if you change the way you think about that, it's like, oh, I'm putting my stuff up there so that people can find me and even know that I exist, then it actually changes your pricing too, right? Because maybe you don't need to make your full profit margin if your idea is you could sell, you know, maybe a little below cost or at cost so that you get people's attention and start to build up your own list, because that's what you need is your own audience. And that's tough to do, especially if you're in a price competitive category. You got to find some way to add value and get them back onto your own list, into your own website or your own app, so that you can make the profit margins that you need.
Yeah. I think there's some, I don't know, there's some glamour now in, I don't know, glamour might not be the right word. There's this, I don't know. I feel like the media has, I think it's glamorized being an entrepreneur. And it's kind of like the tech entrepreneur, you know, having something online. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in your book too, I think you talk about, you know, this lifestyle business. And you know, you got the cover, the guy's on his laptop at the beach, you know, it's just going to be all, is this going to be all, you know, sunsets and, you know, dollars in my bank account? So, what is it like though? I mean, what's the reality for people running an internet-based business? What are they actually facing? I mean, they got this. It's a regular business in a lot of ways, I presume. I mean, what are the issues they face? Is there anything unique or similar stuff?
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that are peddling this passive income sort of myth, really, that, you know, the 4-hour work week stuff, Tim Ferriss's book, great book, not very practical, right? It's a real business. You don't want to spend only 4 hours a week on it, because that means somebody else is watching tens and hopefully hundreds of thousands of your dollars. That's just not responsible, right? If you're doing this right, you want to spend more than 4 hours a week on it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to spend 80 hours a week either. And that's the balance. That's what my book, Click Millionaires, is about, is how do you find that in between? Because being an entrepreneur is a lot of risk, and it's a different lifestyle if you're going to work alone. Me, I had done a lot of time in corporate America. I got really tired of, you know, the more successful you are in corporate America, the more people you end up managing. To me, that was not very much fun. I like doing my own thing, and so I got out of there and did my own thing, and that's what I do. So I work from home. I'm the guy at the beach if I want to be. I control my schedule, and that's what Click Millionaire's book is about, is how can you get from here to there? Now, that being said, it's really not a get-rich-quick book. I'm not that way at all. It takes me a long time and a lot of experience, and that's what I try to spell out in the book. There's a 7-point plan and all these kind of, you know, buzzwordy-sounding things that can help people look at the skills they have, which of those are monetizable, you know, which niches are interesting, and then how can you set up your lifestyle around that? And nowhere in any of my books or my forums or anywhere do I say this is going to happen in a week or even a year. My recommendation is that people take the expertise they have and set up something on the side and grow it over time. Yeah. And over time, you know, if you can spend you have to start with a time budget. How much time do you have? You know, if you've got 6 kids and a wife and a full-time job, I don't know how you're going to do this either, but at least you got to start with every other Thursday night. You carve out 2 hours, and eat that elephant one bite at a time, right? Two hours here, two hours there, and build it up. And that's my recommendation. There's no easy path, but if you put it in over time, it's like anything else. You guys know the tax and financial world, you know, it compounds, right? Mm-hmm. And the sooner you start, the better, and get out there, and your own expertise will compound, as will your profits.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Scott, for coming on. I think you have some websites. I know scottfox.com, spelled, you know, nothing fancy there, scottfox.com.
Right.
Any other places you'd want to send people? I know your latest book, Click Millionaires, is on Amazon, probably on your website as well. Any other places you want to send people, though, to get more information about how to start an internet-based business or how to succeed online?
Yeah. Well, sure. The forum I mentioned might be useful to your listeners. That's mastermindsforum.com. Masterminds, plural, with an S, mastermindsforum.com. And it's simply a forum where I and people from all over the world talk about these kind of things. And it's especially valuable if people are new to entrepreneurship or they're small business owners who are trying to get this going and they don't have anybody to talk to. I find one of the biggest problems for entrepreneurs is they get isolated, right?
Yeah.
Even their own family or spouse. Their own spouse might not understand or even support them.
Yeah.
And it's helpful to have people who can say, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
so that's mastermindsforum.com.
Excellent.
And then if this is useful, there's another book. We just released another book. One of my businesses is a radio booking service that provides interviews like this one. And there's a new book called The Podcasts and Radio Shows Directory. And it just came out last week on Amazon.com, and it's at a really low sale price right now. If anybody's interested in doing their own publicity, getting booked on shows like this and radio shows, that could be helpful to entrepreneurs who are trying to get the word out about their products or their businesses. And that's at, you can go to Amazon and search on podcasts directory and it will show up.
Cool.
So that's a useful resource too, and exclusive.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Scott. We appreciate you coming on to the show today and sharing these excellent insights. And we're going to be bringing on our next guest here in just one second. All right. Well, it's my special pleasure to welcome our guest today, Kayala Kanai, who is and had an internet-based business and had success. He has been in the business. I think he's had his first business when he was 18 years old. And this is Kayala's bio that he's given me. So he says he's had failures and defeats over the course of more than a decade to follow. Success did not come easy, but Kayala has had in the last 2 years, had over $20 million in revenue from online-based businesses and has certainly found success starting back in 2012. So we're going to dive into Kayala's story today. Some of you, in fact, that may notice or may recognize his voice, I guess. I can see him on video here because I've seen him before some of Mark's videos on YouTube. Which I want to get to that and how you market and advertise your businesses too. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, why don't you give us a little bit of your story and how you've found success with an internet-based business. And we want to give some tips, obviously, to those listening in today. But maybe tell us a little about your story.
Yeah, so I'll give you kind of the abbreviated version. Like you mentioned, I got started as an entrepreneur when I was 18 years old. Started out with nightclub promotions, and then, you know, suffered failure after failure after embarrassing defeat for like the next decade as I, you know, was an aspiring entrepreneur. And come about 2010, I was promoting, you know, I had a business, and just like any business, I was looking for customers. And I was doing what most people did. You know, I was like looking at radio advertising. I had banners. I had flyers. I passed out flyers. This is something I did for a long time. And I was just figuring out ways to find customers. And I went online one day and I typed in a Google search that completely changed my life. It said, and it was simply how to generate leads online. And that just took me down a rabbit hole. And I quickly realized that we were trending, right, that the advertising was trending, you know, towards being more and more on the internet. And so I decided to get ahead of the curve and learn how to generate traffic, leads, and customers over the internet. And then by 2012, it took me a while to learn. There was definitely some challenges along the way. There was buying a lot of products from all sorts of gurus and whatnot. And then by 2012, I'd really coupled that with another online business. I started to take my business like fully digital. And that's when I started to have my first success, really in a business that was purely online. So by then I was able to quit my job. I started out in 2012 working in a coffee shop for minimum wage. And by this, within about 7 months of getting things up and running and really staying focused on that, I had quit that job and was full-time online. I've been full-time online ever since.
All right. What are some of the, I mean, what are the things you've tried to sell online? I mean, what's some of the core products you sold or you're even selling today that you're out marketing for online?
So I started out doing mostly affiliate products. So I would sell, I mean, you name it, you know, digital products primarily. These seem to, you know, these are pretty easy to scale. There's no inventory for a digital product, obviously. I mean, and if you're to scale it up and open that up to a larger audience, it's basically just making sure servers can handle the load. But I've also sold nutritional products over the internet, lots of health and wellness products, some physical products, clothing. Almost kind of you name it, in almost every niche, and at least all the major niches, which are like love and relationships, health and wellness, and money and finance.
Okay. So, I mean, when you got into this, you know, I think a lot of people, even me in particular, I'm thinking, you know, I'm selling, obviously we sell legal services and, you know, we're trying to do all these things online to get people to our site. We're writing blog articles, we're putting up video content, we're having tons of social media connections, and we're doing a podcast, right? So, what are the things for someone, whether it's anything that they're marketing? I mean, what are some of the tips you give someone to assess how to sell whatever it is product you have, how to sell it successfully online, or how to market it, I should say, probably. Well, I guess market and sell it. How do you do it successfully online?
That's a great question. So today I have a coaching business where we coach, entrepreneurs on their online business practices. And one of the first things that I talk about actually is first you need to figure out who your customer avatar is, right? So who is your ideal client? What are their age ranges? What are their income brackets? What are the things that they're most interested in? What books do they read? What authors do they follow? What speakers do they listen to? What, you know, seminars are they attending? You really got to get inside of that ideal client. And then it's about figuring out, now, where is that ideal client spending all of their time? Are they mostly on Facebook? Are they on YouTube? Are they doing a Google search? You know, if you're looking for a younger audience, that's an Instagram audience typically. You know, like my son, who's 17, doesn't even like visit Facebook ever, right?
Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that. My kids do not have Facebook, you know. They're 19 and 17. They don't even have Facebook.
Right. I remember when having Facebook was young and hip, and now it's kind of old and douchey. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It changed so quickly.
Boy, this is news to me. I've got young kids, Facebook is still, you know, 5 years ago, it was huge.
My son like hardly ever logs into Facebook. They're mostly on Instagram, and so I noticed that if you're going for those, you know, late teens, early 20s, so you're looking for somebody who's 18, 19 years old, early 20s, I'd say, even, you know, we've done some surveys of our audience. Pretty much if you're like under 30, there's a pretty good Instagram audience. So going back to the point, though, it's just figuring out where is your audience spending more the majority of their time. Like if you're looking for an older audience, right, they're spending it mostly on Google, maybe some of that on YouTube, because, you know, Google owns YouTube. So that's like the second highest used search engine in the world. So first we got to figure out where they're at. Then what we want to do is create an ad that is congruent with the platform that they're most likely to be on. So when somebody goes to YouTube, they're looking for completely different content than somebody who's going to Facebook, and they're looking for something different than somebody who's going to Instagram. So we have to create ad content that's congruent with the platform and how they want to engage with the platform that they're being advertised to. And then lastly, it's about creating a sales funnel that then that crafts a conversation that takes that ideal client through a step-by-step sequence, which eventually gets them to order from you, make a purchase from you, and, you know, become a client. And for me, I think one of the most important things when we're working with clients is, you know, we want them to focus on just one thing. So a lot of people, because they know that you can get traffic from Facebook and you can get traffic from YouTube and you can get traffic from Instagram and, you know, blog articles. And so a lot of people are using like the shotgun approach, you know, they just like, it's, they got a sawed off shotgun and boom, bang, I got a little bit of myself everywhere. Whereas we focus on like the sniper approach, which is, you know, I'm going to focus on one traffic source. So we primarily use Facebook. I'm going to focus on one traffic source. And I'm going to create, I'm going to craft a sales funnel that creates a congruent conversation that starts with content that somebody is likely to want to engage with on Facebook and then takes them down a path that gets them to convert into a client.
Yeah.
Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, what is that? I mean, that's maybe some of the secret sauce, so to speak, of what is that content on, let's say, Facebook, for example. I think, you know, I think for a lot of people who, you know, buy my book or, you know, buy my videos or I think, you know, just in what I do with self-directed diaries, they're mostly on Facebook. You know, I get a lot of people from LinkedIn, from like referrals and stuff like that from other professionals. But the customers themselves seem to always be on Facebook. They're not on Twitter. It's really Facebook focused. But what do you do on Facebook that is unique to Facebook, or what is the, you know, what's the content you put on Facebook that draws someone in to say, oh, I may want to purchase from this person? I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I just try to put relevant stuff out there. And again, I don't know why, I'm just thinking of myself. I'm trying to internalize this for everyone else who may be listening, but how do you know what to get, what's the right content out there? Is there something unique you do on Facebook that's different than you, what you do on YouTube or something else?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And basically, you know, when somebody's on Facebook, they're going to Facebook to read about like what's going on in their friends' lives, right? Like what's going on in the characters that they've come to know via Facebook, whether it's like a personal friend or just, you know, a virtual friend, right?
Yeah.
And so while video ads tend to work really good for us, it's a short video that's combined with a good, I would say a medium, what we would call a medium length story, right? So it's not like a 500 word essay or anything, but it's also not just a short and punchy headline, which I see a lot of people do. Those short and punchy headlines, they'll work a little bit, they work a little bit better for us, at least on Instagram, and a cool image that somebody can click on and go over to. But on Facebook, where we get the majority of our in-house advertising, it's a nice little medium story telling our story, our brand story, telling my personal story of tragedy to triumph, right? How it is that I overcame over a decade of failures and was able to finally create success using, you know, a system, what is now a process that we've kind of systematized. And so it gets them to get to know me. It makes me a real person. It shows that I'm open and vulnerable. And those are the things that they want to, that those customers want to engage with, right? Because in social media, people engage with people. They don't want to engage with brands as much, right? Yeah. So it's not like super exciting that, hey, like, oh, look at Red Bull's in my newsfeed. No, what they want to meet is the athletes that are being sponsored by Red Bull. That's how they get to familiarize themselves with their brand. So it's really about them getting to know me as a human being and seeing a piece of themselves in me that creates an attractive piece of content that they're going to click on and then follow through on the rest of the steps of the funnel.
So it sounds like you're looking to create an experience more than just a some sort of harebrained ad.
Yeah, I'm looking to create a relationship. And I think that's the difference, right? Is here's some stuff that you know, should know about me, and probably I'm probably being more open than most people would be about the challenges that I've faced in life. And yet, you know, at the same time, here's how I've overcome those challenges. And if any of that interests you, you know, let's take this conversation elsewhere. Right. And they can click away and go into a sales funnel.
What are some of the things you think people are doing wrong when they're trying to market or sell online? What are some of the stuff you're like, you just got to start? It drives you nuts when you see it. It's like, this just doesn't work. Why are people even trying this anymore?
I'd say the number one thing that most people get wrong, and we see this a lot with our clients, is that they don't create a relationship with the customer. So I've met lots of people who, like, they're doing well online, but they don't build an email list of their clients, like, not something that's you know, well taken care of. And then even if they are building an email list, they're not staying in contact with those clients on a regular basis. Like, they're not adding more value to that client's life, right? And so we look at the lifetime value of a customer and how, you know, how do we create a relationship with that customer that that increases that lifetime value, that keeps them coming back over and over and over and over again. And I have client customers right now that they've bought every single thing I've ever sold since like 2012. Everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I see their names pop up on orders all the time. Like, man, I love this client. They just keep buying everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's because I've created a relationship with them, right? We just recently hired a new CMO, and he came on board. He's coming from, he's had some big contracts with like Hyundai, Ford. He just wrapped up some work with Ryan Seacrest. When he was interviewing with us, he was also interviewing with Facebook and Amazon. So he was a good acquisition for us. I brought him on board, and one of the things that was attractive about bringing him on board is he understood the affiliate marketing space pretty well, which is where I come from, where I learned to sharpen my teeth. And a lot of what he applied that helped all of these big brands' campaigns is he would go in and say, hey, like, you guys are collecting this data on clients, but you're not utilizing this data very well. You're not creating retargeting audiences. You're not retargeting them with other ads for other offers. You're not creating an ongoing conversation with these clients. And so he would take their follow-up email sequence from 3 days to 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. And he would take their data, turn that into lookalike or retargeting audiences on platforms like Facebook or the Google Display Network, and continue delivering ads to that audience of buyers to show them some of the other products that these big brands had to offer. And of course, that instantly increased the lifetime customer value of those clients. So I think sometimes people believe that the game ends when the sale is made.
Yeah.
And for us, that's where the game begins.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, where can people find more information about you or anything you got upcoming you want to let people know about, Keala?
I appreciate that. Yeah, there's a KealaKanai.com. That's KealaKanai.com. That's it's not a very impressive website right now. I'm getting it revamped, actually. Or you can visit us at awolacademy.com. That's AWOL Academy, ACADEMY.com. That's my primary business there. And that's where we have our digital products that teach people how to generate traffic, leads, and customers online. And then we also, through that process, you can learn a little bit about our coaching program as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much, Keala. We really appreciate you coming on for today's show.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, you bet. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week, of course, with another amazing episode of the Refresh Your Wealth podcast. Mark Kohler will be back, our substitute co-host today. Rick Taylor will have to say his goodbyes now. You know what? In fact, Rick, you may be substituting for me next week, because I'm going to be on vacation, actually. We'll see if you draw the short straw. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everyone.
Happy to be on.
Thanks, Rick, for joining me. And thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.